The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Hey. Good morning, everyone. The first argued case this morning is number 20-2092, Intel Corporation against Qualcomm Incorporated. Mr. Lantier.
May it please the court. It is undisputed that the Lee prior art document teaches each and every component of the radio frequency receiver circuitry claimed in the independent claims of the 356 patent.
Which is that Lee prior art that you're referring to?
Your Honor, this is the Lee prior art document that was the primary reference, the anticipatory reference in ground one of the IPR petitions underlying this appeal.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
To find the claims patentable nonetheless, the board committed two separate errors. Reversing either of those errors requires reversing the board's final written decision. The first error is found in appendix pages 71 to 72, and it's the board's erroneous construction of the claim language carrier aggregation. The board improperly added two limitations to that term, requiring that the carriers be, quote, combined as a single virtual channel, close quote, in order to be, quote, provide higher bandwidth. Now, while both of those added phrases were erroneous, I plan to focus today primarily on the board's addition of the phrase combined as a single virtual channel. And the reason that I'll do so is that the board's later determination that Lee does not anticipate the claims is based entirely on that language, which your honors can see at appendix page 78. So if this court agrees that the inclusion of that limitation combined as a single virtual channel was error, then the board's finding of no anticipation must be reversed.
Also, this is Judge Rayner, does a feasibility study come into play here in your argument? It seems to me that it would.
With respect to the first ground, Your Honor, that's an anticipation ground based solely on Lee. Ground two was an obviousness ground where the feasibility study was used in combination with Lee. And there's no dispute that the feasibility study discloses carrier aggregated signal even under the board's improperly narrow construction requiring that single virtual channel.
Mr. Lantier, getting to the feasibility study, is that describing a carrier aggregation signal in the sense that there are multiple carriers being somehow combined or bonded together into a single signal?
There was no dispute that that's what the feasibility study discloses. And, Your Honor, I'm not sure that there's a lot of clarity in the record as to what exactly the board thought combined as a single virtual channel means, because that language appears nowhere in the intrinsic record. But what the feasibility study does talk about is what it calls component carriers. And what that appears to mean is that if you are, for example, broadcasting, let's say, a single video, when you broadcast that video, instead of sending it over one channel, you would break the video into two parts and simultaneously send the stream on two different channels as opposed to on a single channel. Now, the Lee prior art reference, what that teaches is a system where you simultaneously transmit a Bluetooth signal and a Wi-Fi signal at the same time. And the Bluetooth signal and the Wi-Fi signal will have different information on that. And the Lee receiver will receive both of those things at the same time and process them both downstream.
What makes that aggregation, though? I mean, there's no activity that is akin to rolling them all up into a single signal or anything like that. Am I right about that in terms of Lee, in terms of its Bluetooth signals coming in at the same time Wi-Fi signals are coming in?
Your Honor is correct that there would not be in Lee a combining at the back end of the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth signal to create, for example, a single video. But remember, what the claims here are about has nothing to do with what happens in the baseband processor, which is what would, where that activity would occur. This is all about the RF front end, the amplifier stage of the device. And at the amplifier stage, all that happens is signals come in and they're amplified. They're made stronger so that they can be used downstream. And the 356 patent does not discuss anywhere combining signals later on to create a single channel or anything of the like. And so if we focus on what the claims here are actually about, they're very broadly written to a receiver architecture where the low noise amplifiers can be independently enabled or disabled. That's what Qualcomm got this patent on. And it does not discuss at all combining or not combining two different signals.
Let me get you to the heart of the question for me on claim construction. The patent owner did not invent the concept of carrier aggregation. That was already something that was known in the art. And there is several references in the record that illustrate that carrier aggregation was an established term of art in this field. And when you look at Kovori and the British application and the LTE release and then that other United States patent, altogether, the board concluded that carrier aggregation did necessarily mean some kind of bonding or rolling up or combining of all these various carriers into a single thing. They called it a single virtual channel. And if that's right, then the next question is, what in the patent suggests to us that the patent drafter necessarily created its own personal definition of the already established meaning of carrier aggregation?
Your Honor, first, I would disagree with the premise that it's right that all of the prior art describes carrier aggregation specifically as combining things in a single virtual channel and rolling up signals together. And I think during the next appeal, we can talk about the British application and Uehara where those descriptions are identical. So I don't think that's accurate. But to answer Your Honor's question directly, if we look at the 356 patent, it's very clear that when Qualcomm wrote this patent, it conveyed that carrier aggregation would have a very broad meaning. At column 1, line 32 to 33, it says carrier aggregation is simultaneous operation on multiple carriers. Now, we think that's lexicography under Singer, Chem, and Edwards, but even if it's not, it is very clearly a statement from the patentee as to what the patentee thought the plain meaning of carrier aggregation was at the time the patent application was filed. It's what it conveyed to the public. It said carrier aggregation, which is simultaneous operation on multiple carriers.
What about at column 5, starting at approximately line 17 down to, say, line 22? And this is at Joint Appendix 116. So at column 5, the patent talks about carrier mode. And carrier mode is when you receive one input RF signal comprising multiple transmissions on M sets of carriers, and then ultimately provide one output RF signal for each set of the carriers. So to me, that reads like you're getting one signal in, which has all of those carriers somehow embedded in that one signal, and then the circuitry divides that signal up into multiple output signals, each output signal representing a different set of carriers. So doesn't that suggest that carrier aggregation mode is talking about, the concept is they're all rolled up into one thing together. They're literally aggregated.
That's, Your Honor, respectfully, that I think there might just be a misunderstanding about the technology here. That statement at column 5 describes exactly what happens in the Lee prior art reference. What we're talking about here is an RF receiver. They typically have multiple antennas, but for all of our discussion, we can assume they all have one antenna because Lee depicts one antenna, the 356 patent depicts one antenna. That antenna is going to receive whatever signals are out on the airwaves that antenna is capable of receiving. And when those come in, the issue is a low noise amplifier typically has a certain range. It's only really able to effectively amplify signals within a particular limitation of bandwidth channels. And so what both Lee and the 356 patent describe is if we know we're going to have multiple carriers coming over the airwaves such that one LNA is not, one low noise amplifier can't technologically process in an efficient way those signals, we need to have parallel paths so that we have a low noise amplifier that's set to process one of the carriers we want to receive and a different low noise amplifier that's set to process another carrier that we want to receive. And so what column 5 is talking about is if I know I've got more than one carrier coming in, I have to have enough LNAs to handle each of the carrier frequency ranges that I need to handle. And the invention of the 356 patent is, in the Calcavori reference, you had two amplifiers in parallel. The first one was always on, and the second one was sometimes on, depending on whether you were receiving one carrier signal or multiple carrier signals. And the way Qualcomm got the patent was by convincing the examiner in an interview that their invention was different because in their invention, you could turn that first amplifier on and off, and you could turn the second amplifier on and off independently. And that's what's being discussed at column 5 of the lines that you cited, Your Honor. That has nothing to do with the origins of the signal or whether they originated from a single place or what happens in the device after the signals are amplified. And I think if Your Honor looks at column 4, lines 46 to 48, for example, the board's claim construction would read out that embodiment of what's described as carrier aggregation there, right? It says wireless device 110 may receive multiple transmissions from one or more cells or base stations on multiple carriers at different frequencies for carrier aggregation. Obviously, if the signals are originating from different cells or towers, they're not coming from a single source and being rolled into a single signal. They're coming from different origins.
Did you have an expert testify to that, about what you're talking about now on column 4, reading out an embodiment?
Our expert, I don't think, testified about reading out an embodiment. Our expert did testify about the entirety of the patent specification and focused primarily, I think, on the statements where the patentee says exactly what carrier aggregation is, which is simultaneous operation on multiple carriers. But I would like to speak briefly about the obviousness ground, because I can see my time is running short.
No, proceed, because this will be helpful for the ensuing argument as well. Please continue. We'll save your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is not the typical obviousness case where you have a reference that needs to be modified in order to reach the claim limitations. Here, it's undisputed that the Lee circuitry, unchanged, will process the single virtual channel carrier aggregated signal that is described in the feasibility study. So the only question on obviousness is, would a person of skill in the art reading the feasibility study be motivated to want to use a carrier aggregated signal? And if so, then that person knows that the Lee prior art reference will process that carrier aggregated signal. The board made two errors in finding that there was no obviousness here. And its first error was that it applied a very heightened and incorrect standard for what Intel had to show. It said that there's not a showing of obviousness because Intel didn't show that the particular circuitry of Lee was, quote, necessary to unlock the benefits of carrier aggregation as disclosed in the feasibility study. And that's not the test. The Novartis case that we cite in our brief and others clearly hold, just because it's not the only thing that could work doesn't mean that it's not obvious. And the second error that the board made is that the board said, well, it wouldn't be obvious to combine the carrier aggregated signal of the feasibility study with the circuitry of Lee because Lee doesn't talk about a single virtual channel. But of course, if that was the test for obviousness, that
Mr.
Never
Lantier?
Yes, sir.
What if we were to read those board statements along with the rest of the board decision as providing the following thrust, which is the case for obviousness here presented by Intel is simply too skeletal and underdeveloped because it doesn't explain why a person of skill in the art would even consider plugging in a carrier aggregation signal into Lee. The petition talks about benefits that come with using a carrier aggregation signal, but the petition doesn't explain why those benefits would necessarily be yielded in the Lee reference. Lee is already using multiple carriers, right? So the question is, why in the context of Lee would someone of skill in the art consider this feasibility study, you know, using this new candidate of a signal called a carrier aggregation signal? I think that's, if I understand the board to be saying that, then I don't think that's a legal error to be in that understanding of the case. Is that right?
I don't think it's right, Your Honor, and I think that the way you framed it, well, perhaps is what the board, as you say, is the gist, or I forget what word you used. That's exactly backwards from how the obviousness ground was set forth in the petition and in the declaration, and it's exactly the opposite, I would say, of the way that this should be viewed. The feasibility study says the next generation of LTE is going to send these carrier aggregated signals. It says that carrier aggregation has all sorts of benefits, and those will be good for consumers. And then it says to receive this carrier aggregated signal, if it's going to be a non-contiguous set of carriers, which LTE is going to offer, you will need to use a receiver front end with multiple, what it calls AGC, gain control. That's another way of saying, and the expert's declaration says this, that's just another word for low noise amplifiers. So the feasibility study says to people of skill in the art, the next generation of LTE devices is going to have this type of carrier aggregation. That will have all sorts of benefits. And in order to receive it, you're going to need a radio frequency front end with multiple low noise amplifiers.
So the Lee is not an LTE system, right?
That's right. But you're
right. So it's not just merely using the next generation configuration of LTE using this LTE-based aggregation signal. It's something different. I guess that's maybe that's part of the concern of the board is that more needed to be said and explained about why you would no longer, for Lee's purposes, use the Bluetooth Wi-Fi signals and why would you switch over to this LTE-based system. What in the context of Lee do you get more or what's the rationale for doing that? When Lee is already using multiple carriers?
Your Honor, again, I think that's the opposite way of looking at it from how we present it in the petition and not the right way. I mean, imagine that you know, you received a notice that said we're going to start running a ferry route from Haynes Point to National Harbor, and you have to make it there in 15 minutes, so you should use a speedboat. Somebody then says, well, I'm going to use a particular brand of speedboat to make that ferry route. It's not non-obvious to use that particular brand of speedboat to make the ferry run because, you know, you could have used some other brand of speedboat or because that particular brand of speedboat hadn't been used in the Potomac before. It's all we're saying here is everybody in the field receives a notice that says that you need to do this in order to continue on the track of LTE. And your receiver will need to have multiple LNAs in the front end. The person of skill in the art knows all of the prior art. And the most obvious thing for that person to do is to say, what technology do I already have that I don't need to modify at all that I can use in order to continue to sell receivers that, design receivers and make receivers that will comport with the LTE standard. And that was our obviousness case, Your Honor. And if you review the declaration, for example, Dr. Fay at appendix pages 1092 to 1097, there's nothing cursory or conclusory about it at all. What Dr. Fay is saying is a person of skill in the art who receives that notice from the standard-setting body will be motivated to want to continue to comply with the standard and have the features that the standard sets forth.
Now, so this is Judge Reina. I see that the board said that Intel failed to adequately address why an ordinarily skilled artisan would have considered using the feasibility study. Why did you address that point?
Is Your Honor referring to a particular sentence in the board's decision?
It's a JA84, and I'm quoting, it says that the board said Intel failed to adequately address why an ordinarily skilled artisan would have considered using the feasibility study carrier aggregated single with Lee's amplifier blocks. Your argument is that it's immaterial, but I want you to answer the question whether you actually made a showing.
Yes, Your Honor. I think, and I'm sorry for not seeing the sentence, but I think you may not have read the remainder of that sentence. There it is. I think there's a, what the board says there, and this is exactly the error we're alleging, it's the second error. It says, we find that petitioner does not adequately address why an ordinarily skilled artisan would have considered using the feasibility study's carrier aggregated signal with loose amplifier blocks when Lee does not teach combining carriers as a single virtual channel. That is just tautological because
I get it that you think that that's wrong, that the board made an error in that particular statement in view of the fact that the feasibility study teaches carrier aggregation, so it doesn't matter that Lee does not do that. But don't you still have to have some indication as to why Posita would combine, other than the fact that you got two pieces of art? I know that when combined, you get a certain result, but don't you have to have a reason to combine?
Yes, and the petition and the declaration clearly set that forth. The reason to do the combination is if you don't do the combination, you don't get the benefits of carrier aggregation. You can't receive this single virtual channel carrier aggregated signal, and the person of skill in the art would want to do so. And then the question is, well, is there a piece of prior?
Wait a second. Because why? Because the recited benefit in the study for carrier aggregation is in comparison to using a signal that's only using one carrier. And so you therefore, with the feasibility study, what you are getting as a benefit is a wider transmission bandwidth by having a carrier aggregation signal that is sending data across multiple carriers instead of a single carrier. However, as I've been alluding to a couple times, Lee already gets you data coming in over multiple carriers. And so converting that to a carrier, so-called carrier aggregation signal, you're just still going to get multiple carrier bandwidth data transmission. So if Lee were just a single carrier signal coming in, then I would understand the logic behind what your proposed benefits are based on what the feasibility study says. But right now, based on the fact that Lee already teaches you're getting data coming in across multiple carriers at the moment, I do not understand why you get benefits just based on that loan statement and feasibility study alone.
I'm not trying to test your patience, but I heard when you said it a few times. I want to make sure I address what you're saying. Lee discloses circuitry for processing an incoming set of signals. Right? The focus of Lee, just like the focus of the 356 patent, is what is the amplifier circuitry that you're going to use when you know that you're going to have information coming in over multiple different bands on multiple different carriers. The example given, that's what the patent focuses on. The example given in Lee admittedly is a Bluetooth signal and a Wi-Fi signal that are being simultaneously broadcast and then received by the circuitry and processed. What the feasibility study offers, according to Qualcomm, is that it's the same thing as what's coming into Lee in the sense that it's multiple carriers on the airwaves that need to be processed at the same time. But now, instead of those being Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, those are originating from one source, and they are these component carriers. So, what I think Your Honor is saying is that essentially because you don't have to change anything in Lee in terms of the circuitry in order to process.
What I'm saying is I don't understand what the benefits are. What is the added benefit that you get if you rip out the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth signals and instead use a carrier aggregation signal when you're in Lee, it already in a pre-existing way has the benefit of having a wider transmission bandwidth because it's already using multiple carriers.
Now I understand, Your Honor. Apologies for not understanding. So the benefit is this. In Lee, you are receiving Wi-Fi and Bluetooth at the same time, but those are two different things, right? Maybe you're sending video over your Bluetooth and you're sending a text message over the Wi-Fi. The feasibility study now says, okay, we can be sending a single thing. It could be a single streaming video or your FaceTime call. We're going to break that FaceTime call into two and send it over two separate channels at the same time. And what the feasibility study says there is that is going to allow us to get the movie to you faster, right? Because instead of sending the whole movie across one channel, we can send it simultaneously across two and therefore cut the time to get the movie from point A to point B in half. That's the added difference that Judge Chen, and that is
okay.
I just want
to point out that that's not the way the case for obviousness was pitched in your petition or your reply.
In terms of
explaining what the benefits are in the context of Lee, as opposed to just reciting in the abstract the benefits that the feasibility study identifies in comparison to a signal with just a single carrier.
I respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. I think when Dr. Fay discussed this, when this was discussed in the petition, we did talk about the component carrier concept from the feasibility study and did reference the portions of the feasibility study that talk about doing this. So I would respectfully disagree that we didn't make that argument. That was precisely the argument we were making with respect to this reference. And I think that the argument that you're, the questions that Your Honor is now asking, I don't think that those track the findings that the board made here. What the board did was it said, it didn't show why it'd be necessary to use the Lee circuitry in order to unlock the benefits of the feasibility study's carrier aggregated signal. And that's not the right analysis.
Okay. Any more questions for counsel at the moment? All right, let's hear from the other side, and we'll save your rebuttal time. And we'll, of course, we have the ensuing cases. Okay, Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
Good morning, and may it please the court. In five separate final written decisions decided by two differently composed panels, the board reached the same conclusion. The panels unanimously adopted Qualcomm's construction of carrier aggregation and rejected Intel's overly broad construction. The board's decisions carefully vetted the claim language, the specification, the prosecution history, and the prior art references in the intrinsic record, and the board found that all of this evidence supported Qualcomm's construction.
So this is Judge Rand. I'd like for you to get back to that motivation to combine. And Intel argues that the board made a legal error in its application of a launch standard and apparently requiring that Lee also contain the language which apparently that the feasibility study disclosed. Can you address that argument real quick?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The board did not create a new standard especially for Intel or just for these IPRs. Rather, when that statement is viewed in proper context, the board held Intel to its proof of establishing why a skilled artisan would have looked to Lee to combine with the feasibility study. Intel's theory, the only one it offered, was that the feasibility study and Lee could have been combined to achieve the benefits of carrier aggregation. But given that the feasibility study already teaches using a dual RF front end to achieve the benefits of carrier aggregation, there would have been no reason under Intel's theory for skilled artisans to look to Lee for the same dual RF front end. As the board's reasoning makes clear, that simply put, Lee adds nothing to the feasibility study for purposes of achieving the benefits of carrier aggregation, which is Intel's theory, that is not already disclosed by the feasibility study itself.
Why does it matter whether or not Lee teaches carrier aggregation in view that the feasibility study teaches that?
Because under Intel theory, there was no reason to combine Lee with the feasibility study, given that the feasibility study already disclosed the architecture for a dual front end that Intel looks to Lee to supply. So absent another motivation to combine, there was no reason to reach to combine those two references in the manner claimed. And that's important, Your Honor, because in this case and in the subsequent appeals, Intel's theory on motivation combined is largely identical. Their expert has three paragraphs that largely track across all three appeals. And nowhere, as the board found, does the expert identify a sufficient reason for a motivation to combine. Mr. Lantier pointed to the declarations, and if you see at paragraph 133 of Dr. Fay's declaration, appendix 1092, Dr. Fay notes that the feasibility study discloses carrier aggregation. In paragraph 134 at appendix 1093, Dr. Fay summarizes the feasibility study disclosure that carrier aggregation can be used with a dual RF front end, having a gain control, a mixer, and an ADD converter. And Dr. Fay also states that Lee provides the same dual front end. But as the board found, what Intel and Dr. Fay failed to explain is why a skilled artisan would have looked to Lee's dual RF front end when the feasibility study already discloses that structure for use with carrier aggregation. That is what it's
missing. Wouldn't a person skilled in the art be looking for wider bandwidth? That's what this is all about, wider bandwidth and spectrum aggregation.
That's right. And the feasibility study says you can achieve wider bandwidth and spectrum aggregation with a specific dual front-end structure. So there would have been no reason to look to Lee to supply that same structure that is already present in the feasibility study. What the board is saying is that Lee really adds nothing under Intel's motivation combined that isn't already disclosed by the feasibility study itself.
Just to follow up on Judge Reyna's question, I think the theory of obviousness here is there are benefits that come with carrier aggregation. We know that you would send it into a receiver with multiple front-end amplifiers. Lee is a receiver with multiple front-end amplifiers, and it's receiving all kinds of different signals. And why wouldn't you use a why wouldn't it be obvious to use this new scheme of transmitting signal to a receiver into Lee's receiver and any other receiver that has this architectural design?
Because absent hindsight,
so it's not a question of Lee in particular, but it's more like, you know, we have all these different receiver architectures out there. They all receive, they all have these multiple amplifier designs, and that's exactly what the carrier aggregation signals are suited for, at least in particular circumstances. So what's so hard to understand about why not using this new kind of signal scheme?
So it's absent hindsight, there would have been no reason for a person of ordinary skill in the art to use Lee with the feasibility study, because the feasibility study already identifies the dual RF front-end architecture for which Intel looks to Lee. It's already there.
That's the scary thing about your argument to me, is that you're actually bringing closer together the two references. You're almost portraying them as mirror images of each other in such a way that it becomes more and more obvious to just go ahead and use a carrier signal, carrier aggregation signal in Lee, given that the feasibility study, as you seem to be acknowledging, is already using a carrier aggregation signal to a very, very close cousin of the structure that's described in Lee. So that, it actually, as you can see, it's making me wonder about your case.
Well, let me disambiguate that, Your Honor. There is no on this record, there was no motivation for anyone to look to Lee in view of the feasibility study, because the only motivation Intel identified was to unlock the benefits of carrier aggregation. But the feasibility study already tells you how to do that. There was, as the board found, there's no reason to look to Lee or any particular reference on this record. And I think that this court's analysis in active video is instructive, where the court explained that a conclusory statement that skilled artisans would have known based on a common feature how to combine any number of references to achieve the claimed invention is not sufficient and is fraught with hindsight bias. And that's the case here.
Counselor, I thought that the board refused to consider Lee because it doesn't teach combining carriers as a single virtual channel. That's where the board faulted with respect to Lee. But why does that matter if that particular teaching is contained, is disclosed in the feasibility study? The feasibility study does teach carrier aggregation, and yet the board says you can't combine Lee because it doesn't teach carrier aggregation.
The board's analysis there explains that there would have been no reason under the theory that Intel proffered, to look to Lee to make the combination. There's nothing unique about Lee that would recommend itself under Intel's theory for use of carrier aggregation.
Are you familiar with the court's TQ Delta opinion?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So, I mean, to me, I saw a potential parallel between what's going on here and what happened in TQ Delta, where this court concluded there was no motivation to modify the references because there the concern was even if a skilled artisan could have combined those teachings in a way that would create the claimed invention, there was nothing in the record that explained why it would have even occurred to a person of skill in the art to have made that modification. And so that's what I'm wondering, is that what's going on here? Is that what the board was trying to communicate here? Is that all we have is a description of the benefits of the feasibility study in the abstract without actually connecting it to the specific context of the Lee reference and why someone looking at Lee, it would have occurred to them to try to do this switch over to using a carrier aggregation signal.
That's correct, Your Honor. Under Intel theory, it would have, as the board explained, there would have been no reason to look to Lee. And I would further add, Your Honor, the board findings here that the motivation to combine is a purely factual issue that's reviewed under substantial evidence. On this record, there's no basis for displacing the board's finding that Intel failed to carry its burden to establish a motivation to combine feasibility study and Lee in the manner claimed. Unless Your Honors have any questions, I'll give back the court its time.
Just really quickly, the claim construction question?
Yes.
I mean, that seemed to be the primary debate both below and here. The opposing counsel today talked about how the board's claim construction is too narrow because it reads out an embodiment discussed in column 4. Do you have a response to that?
So a couple of responses, Your Honor. I think that argument was raised and undeveloped for the first time in a reply brief. There's no evidence of that in the record. And I don't see how it reads out that embodiment in any way. So there's nothing inconsistent with that passage and the board's construction here.
Yeah, Counsel, was there proof proffered to show that combining the feasibility study with Lee would result in a wider bandwidth? Does bringing Lee aboard, does that produce wider bandwidth or spectrum aggregation?
It does not, Your Honor, because under Intel theory, Lee simply adds nothing that's not already present in the feasibility study.
Just to put a finer point on Judge Reyna's question, do you get wider transmission bandwidth than you already get in Lee if you switch out the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi signals and replace them with a carrier aggregation signal?
Well, a carrier aggregation signal would allow you to extend the bandwidth for a particular signal because you can then use multiple carriers to transmit that signal. In Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, you have two different signals, but the only way you would get there in this case is through hindsight.
Did you make these hindsight arguments in your brief?
I believe we explained that in the 2240 case, yes. In the 2092 case, I believe our analysis was that they failed to establish the claim. They failed to establish why you would combine the claims. I'm sorry. Intel failed to establish why the references would be combined in the manner claimed, which is, in effect, a hindsight analysis.
Okay. Any more questions for counsel at the moment? Okay. Thank you. Then we'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. You didn't say it this way, Judge Chen, but I think that counsel's answer to your last question was yes, that you would get higher bandwidth if you combined the carrier aggregated signal of the feasibility study with Li as compared to Li without it. Let me just make three quick points. The first is the thrust of the argument that we just heard about combining Li and the feasibility study is...
Mr. Lantier, did you find something in your petition or your reply that actually says that?
Yes, Your Honor.
You get more in the context of the Li system?
Not in hyperbole, Your Honor, but the answer to your question is yes. If we turn to appendix page 1092, this is Dr. Fay's declaration in the 001.
I was talking about your petition or your petitioner reply.
Yes, Your Honor, the petition. Sorry, I'll just get the right site for Your Honor. The petition, I was citing Dr. Fay's declaration, the same is set forth in the petition. Let me explain what it is while I find the site, and then I will give you the site. What we said in both what Dr. Fay said in his declaration and what is reflected in our petition is that the feasibility study teaches, this is at paragraph 133, that LTE Advanced extends release 8 with support for carrier aggregation, where two or more component carriers, CCs, are aggregated to support wider transmission bandwidths up to 100 megahertz and for spectrum aggregation. And then the following paragraph states again that you would have been motivated to turn to the amplification circuitry of Li because you want to unlock that potential. So what Dr. Fay is saying there and what is in our petition as well, at the corresponding section, is that the feasibility study is telling you that you're going to get wider transmission bandwidth if you use this form of carrier aggregation. And he says specifically that the person that's still in the art would be motivated to use the Li prior art reference in order to get that wider carrier aggregation. Now, does he do a comparison specifically between the amount of transmission bandwidth you get with the combination of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and the amount that you get with this type of carrier aggregation? He does not, but I don't think that that's the relevant question here because there was no dispute below, and I believe Qualcomm even argued that get as much of a bandwidth boost by just using Bluetooth and Wi-Fi together because those are smaller frequency bands. And Your Honors, I will get that site for Your Honor, but did want to just make two points before I run out of time. And this turns back to the claim construction. The claim construction here is wrong because it flips the Phillips analysis on its head. It gives priority to prior art references over statements that are directly in the patent itself. The patent specification is the single best source of what the claim language means. And in particular, if Your Honors would turn to column 1 at lines 37 to 39, you'll see that the patent itself specifically shows that the intended usage of carrier aggregation is broader than simply a component carrier. Because what the sentence says here is a carrier may be referred to as a component carrier. That's one option. But it also could be a frequency channel, a cell, et cetera. And there's no dispute that in Li, the receiver is receiving two different frequency channels. One frequency channel is Wi-Fi, and the other is Bluetooth. The board did the opposite of what Phillips tells us to do here. It started with Qualcomm's proposed construction, and then it scoured the record to try to find something to support that proposed construction. It never found the language single virtual channel in any of the prior art or anything else in the intrinsic record, and yet it ruled that the claim construction was what it was because the prior art it said supports the notion of a single virtual channel. It made no findings that the patent specification itself would support that, and there's no argument that the intrinsic record in terms of distinguishing over Hirose supports a single virtual channel. It's simply not there. And Your Honors, we would ask respectfully that the claim construction be reversed.
Right. Anything else at the moment? We will continue any point that still requires evolution when we get to the next case. All right, so that this case now is submitted.